voice and your opinion. We want to hear it at 888-574-2723. The Talk of Connecticut Morning Show with Gary Byron.
You know, we've been hearing that the majority Democrats have introduced some of their agenda and some of the bills that they are trying to get behind here and pass through the legislature. And it's a process, you know, it can be an arduous and long lasting process. A bill can start in one committee. I've said this many a times, and it could end up in three or even more, you know, committees. And particularly if it's got a fiscal note attached to it, it's got to pass appropriations. And sometimes it doesn't pass the first year. Sometimes it takes a couple or a few years to pass. Or sometimes it passes committee and then you run out of time in the chamber and it kind of like dies on the vine, as I like to say, where it makes the go list. It's ready to be called and you just run out of time and you have to go see an ADA and that's it. The session's over. And then I get asked this question all the time. Well, the following year, it goes right back up on the list. It's like, no, it's got to start that process all over again. I think I get that question asked quite frequently. Good morning. It's Gary Byron, 7-Eleven here on this Friday Eve, the 22nd day of February. Glad to have you on board the old morning train. Our first guest into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview chair is, he is the Speaker of the House. He was sworn in, I believe, in January of 2021. As our 105th Speaker of the House since the state constitution of 1818. He also follows his dad. His dad was Tom Ritter. Many people, it's a name that people would remember. He's a former Speaker of the House. He and I served in the legislature for my couple of terms. And actually, there was a couple of different speakers that I served with. Well, let's bring him on. Let's welcome to the show Speaker of the House, Matt Ritter. Matt, good morning.
Hey, Gary, how are you? Good morning.
Oh, great, great. Nice to hear your voice. How have you been?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
Kids are on break, so it's never easy when they're on break. Looking forward to going back to school on Monday.
But. I'll bet you are. Actually, they got a pretty good week for this the break. I mean, it's cold, but at least it's not, 40 degrees, I guess,
yeah,
and the sun is out.
Not bad.
You know, it's not too shabby.
Yeah, not terrible.
Listen, I'm glad. I've been trying to get you on the show for years, man. For some reason, I couldn't get you on. You're a hard man to get to.
Oh, stop it. I'm glad to come at any time.
Well, I appreciate that. So I was just mentioning how you took the speakership in 2021. And I served with you when you were a rank and file member of the House and a real darn good one at that. So let's start with this before we get into issues and what is on the House Democrat agenda for the session. What surprises you most? I mean, I know your dad was a legend as speaker years ago. I served with you when Brendan Sharkey was a speaker and then followed by Joe Arosemowicz. And I know that you were, you were the leader of the caucus for a while, but you never really know something until you stand in those shoes and it's you with the gavel in your hand. What surprises you or surprised you most in assuming that role?
It's a good question. I would say without a doubt it is you become a little more, you can become a little bit of a psychiatrist, a little bit of a confidant, a therapist. Members will call you both parties and tell you very personal, intimate details. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's positive things like they're getting married or having a child and they need it, you know, they want to let you know that their schedule may be adjusted. Sometimes they call you and say, I'm sick and I'm gonna be away for a while or I'm going through something. So I think for me, that's probably been the most interesting part is the respect that all 150 other members have for that office and that title. And they want to let you know. And, you know, sometimes you get a call and someone says, I got a wedding, on April 26th. Are we going to be in session? Right. And I love that part of the job. It's just a very unusual thing in politics that you have something like that.
You're in a unique situation because you can get guidance from your dad. What advice did he give you?
You know, I say this a lot. I mean, I think my dad, is very careful about that. We spend most of our time talking about UConn basketball and the Red Sox, and not a lot about politics. But I obviously watching him, you know, I was in high school when he was sort of leaving his political career, so I was, you know, relatively old and can remember observing him. And so I think you watch it a little bit and you see it. But I think he was always very clear about, you know, you got to be obviously trustworthy in politics. Your word's got to be your bond. If you say you're ending at 6 o'clock, you end at 6 o'clock. If you agree to call a bill, you call that bill. And also, you know, he's always felt, and I agree with him, that there's got to be a culture in the chamber of respect for one another. And we've done very well over the last 3 years in Connecticut. We don't always agree. And I get criticized for not maybe being harsher and staying till 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh,
and,
God.
You know, and
I remember
opponents. But our chamber runs very, very well, and there's a respect in there. And if you came in and you saw any given day, you would say, you know, that ain't that bad. Those people actually, you know, work well together even when they disagree. And I'm very proud of that. But the only way you create that culture is by being honest and transparent. And I think we've done a good job of that. And a lot of credit goes to Jason and Vinny as well, the two leaders for their caucuses and the way we've been able to work together.
Speaking of Vinny, I've had conversations with him online, you know, on the air and privately. And I've asked him about you, you know, and I said, well, what's – I never served on any committees with you, Matt. I mean, people would ask me, what's Matt Ritter like? And I'm like, I don't have any details or in-depth opinion of him one way or the other, because I really didn't know him that well when I was up there with you. We didn't serve on this, any of the same committees together. I said, so I've never had an issue with him. He's fine by me. You know, he never struck me as some, you know, loudmouth who was just looking for attention. So I would talk to Vinny, and I'm like, what's it like working with him, you know, with him? Because that's key. And people like to know that the leaders of each caucus, whether it's the Senate or in the House, that the two opposing leaders can at least work together. And he said to me, and I'm going to paraphrase here. I don't remember the exact quote, but I can tell you it was this sentiment. He said, Gary, we get along exceptionally well, and it goes beyond politics or our roles here. He's a decent guy. He's fair. He's everything I could want in a speaker and to collaborate with as leaders of our caucus. And I was beside myself in joy. I really was, Matt, because it's not always that way, as you and I both know.
Yeah.
What's your secret sauce here? What's your secret to having that kind of reputation that the leader of the opposing caucus can turn around and pay you that type of compliment that we certainly don't hear or see in D.C. Right now?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty high praise, and the feelings are mutual. I mean, look, I think our secret sauce is communication. You really have to talk a lot, and you got to remember when you're going through a crazy day and it's running fast and you got to say, time out. Have I talked to Vinny? You know, have I talked to Jason? Because when you're a speaker, you got to make a million decisions a minute the last couple of weeks. And sometimes it's just a matter of saying, okay, how do you want this to go? And a lot of the dust-ups, the flare-ups, it's come from a lack of communication or a lack of trust. But I'll tell you something else we did. And this goes back a little bit to my predecessor, Joey Arasimowitz, and we've really taken it to a new level. When I started, and they said session's going to start at 11 a.m., I showed up at 11 a.m. Yeah. I'm a very punctual person. And it would start at 3. You remember those days?
Oh,
right?
Yeah. There's legislative time. Right.
And nothing drains the chamber more than when people who have jobs and children, like me, come at 11 and don't start till 3. And I got to call my wife and say, I don't know when the heck I'm coming home. We start literally on the dot. Okay? On the dot. I'm in my seat, on my perch, ready to rock. And we leave it a good time. You know, the days of I'm going to punish you till 5 a.m., how can you expect people to go to work or drive home at 4 o'clock in the morning? I don't want to do that.
Every day.
So we've had one debate in my entire career that went past, in 3 years as speaker, that went past midnight. And we started that bill at 10 a.m. It just was really controversial. We try really hard to respect people's time. And once you respect people's time and you respect the process, you know, they might not vote for the bill, but they go, they've given me all I can ask for as a legislator: predictability, stability, honesty, transparency. And you know what? They're the majority, and they're going to sometimes pass bills we don't like. But that's part of democracy, right?
Yeah, you know, and I remember it's not so much of, you know, hey, if we have to stay up till 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, anybody, you know, you could do it. But I remember the days where it wasn't that we were just up in the chamber at 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. And that it was that you had to come back for 9 to caucus and 10 right. to gavel in and do it again and be out until 3 or 4 o'clock. It was every day be out till 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning in the chamber again. And then same thing. When that day's over, you're back. Now, I live in Newington, so, I mean, the drive from, you know, Newington to the Capitol was hardly anything. But these people who represented districts on the outskirts of the state, I felt if they didn't get a local hotel or sleep in their office, yeah. I mean, it was rough. And that was, you know, that was bothersome. But, yeah, I remember those days all too well. You become loopy. You know, you're in a real precarious situation here. I mean, you've got three facets of your own House Democrats, right? You've got moderate Democrats, you've got progressive Democrats, let's not forget the Black and Latino caucus, and they all seem to have, and I think this is a misconception, where all Democrats think alike. It's no different than all Republicans think alike, and you and I both know that that's not necessarily true. How then, as leader, are you... Well, you always heard the expression, you can't keep 100% of the people happy 100% of the times, and that's true in life. How are you able to maintain that fair and balance of all three facets of your own caucus?
Yeah, it's explaining to them the reality of the situation, which is there's enough moderates to kill bills, right, to deprive you of 76 votes. There's enough progressives to deprive you of 76 votes. There's probably enough of everything. All it takes is 25 people to get together on a piece of legislation. Our caucus goes from Eastern Connecticut now all the way to Greenwich. We have every seat in Greenwich, which I never thought I'd say, right? Mm-hmm. So our party is a very diverse party in Connecticut. And I think that's a good thing. But again, I explained to the caucus two rules, right? You need to work with the Republicans and you need to work with your caucus. Because if you can't work within your caucus, you're not going to get a bill passed, and you're going to have to find those changes and amendments that you can live with. The other thing that I tell people, this surprises people, I never require people to vote for anything. I have never called somebody in my office and said, you need to vote for this, ever, ever, ever. And psychologically, I think it's very important. First of all, it's not my style. Who the heck am I to tell somebody who ran for office they got to vote for something? I would never do that. And I know that prior speakers, that was something that they would do from time to time. My view is you got elected, you do what you want. But I think it has a bigger impact. It's my way of saying, you got to come to your own conclusions. You got to figure out what kind of member you want to be. And if you want to just simply vote no all day, go ahead. I don't care. Or do you want to be somebody who is part of the process, who is willing to take 80% of what you want and really get into the weeds? And I try to elevate people to be chairs of committees or deputy speakers who I think have demonstrated an ability to work across not only the aisle to the Republicans, but to Democrats, right? There are probably some moderate Republicans who are more liberal than my most moderate members in my caucus, right?
I've seen that.
And so you got to figure that out. And if you reward people solely based on seniority or who's the loudest or who tweets the most, you're not going to have that culture. I try to elevate people that I truly believe can sit down, solve problems, and also become the next leaders of our state. And I think I've had a good track record of the chairmanships, and it's a good balance of moderate and liberal. But if you can't compromise in our caucus with 98 people, you're not going to succeed. And if your threat is, well, I'm not going to vote for it, it's not a threat to me because I don't care how you vote. Don't vote for it. I'm not bullying you. I'm not going to withhold something from you or your district. You vote any way you want. And now people realize it's not a bargaining chip. I'm not here to negotiate with you. It will fall squarely on you to explain your vote. You can't just blame the speaker. I think that has a big psychological impact.
Sure,
I do.
It does. All right, I got to take a 60-second break. When we come back, we're going to get into some of the priority bills this legislative session. More with Speaker of the House, Matt Ritter, right after this.
Time is precious. Between work, the kids, and caring for an ailing mom, I have less and less free time. So the time I spend with mom, I want to be meaningful. That's why I leave the cooking, cleaning, and laundry to Euro American Home Care for You. They do it all so that my time with mom is about us, not chores.
Make your time together memorable and leave the cleaning, cooking, laundry, bathing, and errands to Euro American Home Care of Berlin. 860-829-0208. That's 860-829-0208. Online at homecare4u.com.
No one ever likes calling their insurance company. It usually means there's a problem. And when there's a problem, you don't want to talk to a stranger. You want your agent, the agent who knows you. That's Michael Van Otterkirk and his staff at State Farm of Newington. State Farm has been the number one auto insurer in the U.S. every year since 1946. So when a problem arises, you'll be relieved to call State Farm of Newington, 860-666-1037. Because like a good neighbor, State Farm of Newington is there.
You're tuned in to the Talk of Connecticut Radio Network, Mornings with Gary Byron, the Republican voice of reason.
24 minutes after the hour of 7, our guest is the Speaker of the House here in the Connecticut General Assembly, Matt Ritter. Before I ask you about your priority bills this session, it's funny. Yesterday I had Sean Scanlon in, and he actually is a regular. He comes in once a quarter, so about four times a year. He comes in for the full hour. He sits down. We have coffee together. We do an interview segment, and then he takes we go to open phones, and he takes questions all the time. And William Tong, for that matter, comes in as well. And it's kind of like old home week when we kind of chew the fat a little bit about, our time together in the legislature. I hope that the next time that we're able to get together that you can come in person and, spend some time and maybe here for an hour and maybe take some questions from listeners. I know you're not able to do that today because I know you're in session as well, and I think that poses a little bit of a challenge. Yeah. Sean shared something with me. You guys, you two get confused for each other regularly, don't you? He says, but he's a little more handsome than you are, he said.
So. Oh, stop it. We really do. I can tell you we probably call each other at least once or twice a week where somebody will have confused me with him or vice versa. And we always know it. The telltale is they'll ask our wives' names, and they're different, or, how is it being comptroller, how is the legislature, and they'll mix it up. It's pretty funny, actually. Yeah.
But who's more handsome?
I won't comment on that, but Sean, he's got nice hair. I'm not, I don't have the gel going. Maybe I should gel it up a little more. He's always very good together.
He's got more gel.
That's very. But he's a constitutional officer. You know what I mean? He's got to do that. So.
And you got to have the gel when you're a constitutional officer. All right. So let's look at some of your priority bills this legislative session in our remaining time together this morning.
Yeah, and by the way, I'd love to come in person right when session ends. So why don't we try to get that in the books for May? And I'd love to take questions. And
done.
It's an easy drive for me too.
So I'll take.
Look,
you up
our
on that.
Number one priority is the budget. I mean, that's really what the legislature at its core function really needs to do every year. And even though we do a biennium,
it's right. It's a biennium, but it's tweaks.
Yeah, 2 years, we always make amendments, right? There's no way you're not going to amend the second year of the budget. And so we just have some issues, right? Higher education. You've heard from UConn and the CSUS system, and I think we're going to need to find a way to put more money there. I think there's a growing concern about, some of the cuts that have to be made at these institutions, and we got to sort of reimagine that. So I think the budget and waiting for April to come in, but the good news is we think we're in a good spot, and the state is in such a better position than it was, when you and I served some 10 years ago, and we had, to make reductions. We're not doing that. So that's the first thing. I think outside of that, look, you're going to see bills. We have some stuff dealing with nursing homes and aging, which I know is a bipartisan product. There's a lot of talk about AI and all that stuff, which admittedly is a little above my pay grade. Senator Maroney's been really good on that. So you'll see some issues, but it's a very short session. And so it's really hard to run really, really difficult bills in a short session. And so we're mindful of the calendar. I mean, we basically have 3 weeks to pass everything through both chambers when you start doing, session every day in April.
No, I remember when I left in 2019, that was only 5 years ago. And I remember that the short session would more or less be committee bills, number one and number two, the little tweaks, as I call them, to the budget. You said something about our Connecticut college system where they're asking for more money, yet enrollment is down and they're still receiving, endowments and they're receiving donations and, there's such high salaries there and tuition keeps going up. And I think the public is just frustrated with that.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at it, I mean, for UConn, for example, enrollment's not down. I mean, UConn needs to be building more housing on campus, more housing at its satellite campuses. UConn's, it's endless what the demand is and what they can do. But remember, they did the one of the real deficits for UConn in the CSU system is they don't negotiate the pay raises. That's done as part of CBAC. And so when they get hit with an increase, that has to mean either they have to find it through tuition increases or the state has to increase its block grant. And so the real one of the real deltas in the numbers right now is just the state employee salary increase, which, you know, is 3.5-4% probably this year. But you're right. The CSUS has a couple campuses that are on decline. We need to look at that. It's not a blank check. But having objectively looked at the numbers, I think it's fair to say that there's a middle ground between what the governor proposed and what they're asking for. Mm-hmm. I think it's our job to try to find that.
That paid leave law covering all private sector employees in Connecticut is a huge issue, as is prescription drug affordability. I was talking to Sean Scanlon about that one yesterday. Yep. But I think, you know, I mean, man, I'm running out of time here. I got to let you go. I didn't realize where we were. But all right, so I'm going to take you up on your offer. We're going to bring you in studio in May when the session's over. We'll do a wrap-up. You'll be here for an hour in person and even take some phone calls. How's that?
And I'll bring some breakfast. I look forward to it.
Whoa! Yes! Matt Ritter knows what's up.
He already knows the way to our hearts here. All right. Mr. Speaker, thank you so much, Representative. Great to talk to you again. It's been a while.
You too, Gary, and we'll talk soon, okay?
I look forward to it, as always. Coming right back to your phone call. Stay right there.
There are widespread pockets of cell phone outages reported across the country with no word yet what might be causing it.
There was also word that 9...